Welcome.
Oh, now recording.
Yet another episode of When a Guy Has a Really Fucked Gender. As always, I'm your host, Jolene. And I'm joined today by Kay Fabe, as your online handle. How are you doing?
I'm great. That's me. I'm Kay Fabe. Hello. I'm happy to be here.
Hell yes.
First podcast I've ever done ever.
Yes. That was another. We were talking before this about my appearance on SF Ultra / Perfect Taste Forever, which you all in the audience should go listen to. If you want to hear me talk about the book The Fifth Wound some more. But one of the other things that Sean, the host of that podcast, said about this podcast is that it's very obvious that most guests have never been on a podcast before.
I'm just like, I'm trying to sit here as like professional as I can, but like then I start saying, you know. Okay.
We're having fun here. This is all about having fun.
We're going with the flow. We're chilling.
Yeah. How would you describe your gender?
So for all intents and purposes, I am a cis woman. If you were to ask me after like we're like super besties, I might tell you that my place in community is more like a two-spirit person, just because I am Native and I do occupy like the mother and the father. Like I am two-spirit in the way that Baphomet, in the way that the creator is two-spirit, like, you know, a nurturing spirit of all encompassing gender. But walking down the street, that's a lady, you know?
Okay. Hell yeah. Well, we're going to talk. Yeah, there's a lot there for me to ask you about, but let's just kind of take it in order. What was gender like when you were young? What was your childhood like?
So I was very fortunate that my mom was kind of more open-minded about the kinds of people that she let me be around. For example, my first, like, one of my first babysitters that I can remember, and I remember I really loved them, was a gay man / drag queen. We called them Stevie, and they were fun. They were great. But beyond that, as a child, very tomboyish, you could say. And then as I got into high school, I actually began to transition, and I was a boy for a while.
Okay. Hell yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot. I'm old, so it's like
No, it's okay. I mean, yeah, that was another thing that I knew was gonna come up, but I don't know. So okay. Yeah. What's the kind of genesis of that transition? Like you said, you were sort of a tomboy when you were younger. Your mother was very I assume that the drag queen was not like babysitting you in drag, although that's a very amusing idea.
It was so, like, you know how in the 90s there was gay feminine men that kind of went the line. They were drag queens, but also sometimes they were a little draggy in their presentation in everyday life. Like Stevie would be like, you know, regular, you know, a man, I guess you could say. But then, like, you have the clip-ons and the eyeshadow and the falsies and that. But
not like a
very
full
much.
Face.
No, not a full face. Just little accents, just to be fun.
Yeah,
that's yeah. What he always did. That's what they always said. I want to be fun with it.
Yeah, I still see some gay guys do that, probably not quite as many as that one.
And I love it, and I think we should bring it back a little bit more.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. It's really cool. I support.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, okay. So tomboyish, you've got your draggy, your drag queen babysitter. what
yeah age... My mom's also very like masculine, so there's okay. that. And we'll get into her because she identifies as like a gay man in a woman's body, and if you ask her that, that's what she'll tell you.
Yeah, so, I love this one.
She, you know, my mom's a hoot and a half. I love her so much. But we can get into her later. What was your question? What age?
Well, now I have another question. Was your father around or have gender?
So,
or...
My dad, I'm very fortunate. My dad is and has always been in my life. Although he's my native half. He's full native. He's very like, he's an ex Jehovah's Witness, so he's kind of a little bit uptight, but like he never cared. He just wanted us to be happy. But like for him, his masculinity is like a very rigid thing, especially the kind of native that we are, hand in hand with a lot of machismo. So it's very, very like cis hetero masculine.
Okay.
But he was very chill with me being who I wanted to be. And also, like, my sister is bisexual. My sister's a little butch bisexual, I swear to God. If you could see her, you would be like, oh, yes, I know what you mean. But, you know...
She's older?
Actually, I'm the oldest.
Okay, you're the oldest. Okay.
Well, of my mom's kids. My dad has two kids from a previous marriage, but I don't really talk to them.
Okay, I see. And were your parents together for a lot of your childhood, or?
My parents was the classic, like, they should have divorced, but they stayed for the children, but the children are like, hey, get a divorce, you know?
Okay, yeah. Extremely classic.
Well, I mean, we all have good relationships independently. It's just their relationship together is not good.
Okay, I see what you mean. Okay. So, yeah, so then, like, how does your sort of like, you know, tomboyishness grow into, as you said, you were sort of, you did transition as like a teenager.
Yes.
How does that sort of go?
So what had happened was, as a kid, I used to do like the, you know, the Hallmark stuff. I used to want to like pee standing up and like, you know, only want to do boy things and like, you know, really resented femininity, and whether that's it was pushed on me or what, I don't know, but I really resented femininity, as a lot of queer women do in their childhoods. But so I am, as far as transitioning I transitioned in the way that when I began puberty, I was put on like a kind of birth control. Because I am a hyperandro woman, it is a spectrum. I'm kind of like, in if there's a line, if there's a Kinsey scale, I'm kind of like on the like 7. Not really a full 10, but you know, I'm at a 7 of hyperandrogyny. But okay. When I was hitting puberty, they put me on like, basically like estrogen supplements. And okay. So when I felt like, sorry, I don't mean to keep cutting
you.
No,
you're fine. Keep going.
So when I like decided, because I had occupied a very like butch masculine space already since, gosh, I came out at 11. So I had always been like a lesbian person. And I always occupied a what would the kids would call it today, a trans masculine space, like the line between butch and trans mask, or the combination. But there was a point where I just wanted to experiment. Like I wanted to see how far I could grow my body hair, how deep my voice could get, how, you know, how well I could pass, you know, going off of my supplements. And so I guess that's where it really began, kind of just like, you know, an experiment of the human body.
Okay. So the when you say hyperandro, do you mean you had like elevated testosterone levels or?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So my mom was very concerned about how fast my puberty was going, so far as like the body hair thing. So she took me to the doctor, and the doctor referred us to a specialist, and they ran some tests, and they found that I had elevated testosterone for a little girl, quote unquote, a cis girl my age.
Right.
And this was when I was like about 9.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I began puberty very early. The very first signs was probably when I was like in first grade.
Oh my God. Was that also body hair? Or?
Well, I've always had hairy arms, but the facial hair started coming in really bad.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, and also, you know, my chest started coming in.
Okay. What was that like with respect to gender, as far as like, I guess from what you're saying so far, I might hope that your mother was like not really, right? Like, I can imagine some parents being like very sort of like shaming about something like that. But from what you've described so far, it sounds like that's probably not your mother.
No, I am actually very lucky that my parents, for lack of a better word, unconditionally love me. Not to brag, but my parents love me a lot, no matter who I am or what I do. I guess my mom was just confused about it. She didn't want me to like get bullied, but I was already being bullied because I was fucking gay. They called me Gayla.
I mean, that was the next thing I was going to ask, is that even if your family's like, supportive or not shitty about these things, I have to imagine that like the rest of the world probably is. And it's got to be like strange. I mean, like you said that this all starts like very young, like around first grade. That's got to be like a weird thing to have going on in elementary school. I don't know if you have any insights about that or anything to say about that besides that it sucked.
No, yeah, it was actually I'm not going to lie, it was kind of traumatizing because it was just like, you're vastly different from the other girls. And, you know, you're sexualized by grown men. Like, the first time I was ever, like, hit on by a full grown-ass man was when I was, like, 7. Because I've always had a butt. That's another thing. I was always very sexualized for my butt because I have a big butt. So it's a traumatizing thing. And I think that might have led me to kind of reject all of that. But also it felt good. Like I remember like having the facial hair and being like, haha, I look like a boy. You know, very, I don't know, it felt cool, you know, to be that person.
Right. Okay. I can see that. Yeah, especially like if you already have some of the kind of like, I mean, like you said, you sort of, you know, described your attitude when you eventually went off these estrogen supplements. I can definitely see that kind of tracking with this, with this sort of vibe, lack of a better word.
It's all very complicated.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, but it sounds really, okay. So what age did you say you went on the supplements, and then what age did you go off of them?
So I went on my supplements at age 9. And that kind of brought my puberty rate to kind of more of a normal level for my age. And then when I was like 14, so when I was 13, I joined Tumblr. And when I was 14, I found FTMs and all the stories. I was like, oh, that's like me, you know, that whole gig. And I read, and then so I go to the library and I put trans, and then I checked out every single book. And then there was this one book. Oh my God. I wish I remembered the title, but it was a girl, or like it was a trans boy actually. And the peeing standing up thing. And it just like clicked for me. And I was like, oh, that can be me. I can do that. And so I stopped taking my supplements, not telling my mom at first, I'm not going to lie. But socially, I transitioned right away. Okay. Like, next day, it never occurred to me to be hiding it or anything like that. It's just like, next day, I showed up and I went to my friends and I was like, okay, my name's Shelby now. That was my, like, name for a while. And there's still people from high school that remember me as Shelby. Because I felt like it was neutral, you know?
Okay. I will say I've never thought of Shelby as neutral, but...
I actually knew several boy Shelbys that inspired me. But this is the South, okay. So I feel like there's, like, Leslies and, like, stuff like that where it might not...
That tracks. I could... I've still never heard of that, but I believe it. Interesting. Okay. Huh.
That was my name at first. Eventually, I went by Eli as was the fashion at the time. At the time period we're talking about, I started going by Shelby, and I was like, and my pronouns are he, him. And I started doing the whole ace bandage thing, binding thing. Don't do that. Disclaimer, everybody listening, don't do that.
Yes, I've been told that that's bad to do. Okay. And was Tumblr the first way that you encountered the idea of like being trans? I guess you said that you came out as a lesbian at like 11, right?
Yes. I knew trans women. It never occurred to me that I could be a trans boy.
Yeah, I've heard many cases of trans people in both directions sort of encountering that, or sort of having that kind of idea about things where you're like, oh, you can't go this direction.
Then I just started growing out my facial hair, and I cut all my hair off because my mom had made me keep it very long. For a majority of my life, and I put it in a ponytail, and I cut off the ponytail, and I had the little Justin Bieber, like a little shag cut.
Excellent. Oh my goodness. Classical. Okay. How did you know trans women? Did you just like know about the idea of that, or?
So my mom was not very restrictive in what I was allowed to watch. And so I saw Hedwig and the Angry Inch when I was like maybe 11, probably 10 or 11. We just moved back from. So yeah, so 10 or 11. And also like my mom had friends that were trans women, like looking back, they were trans women.
Okay, they weren't really like introduced to you as such, but you can put pieces.
It's just together. Like you knew, but like it's just like you don't like you know, but you don't really care and you don't talk about it. It's just like, hey, that's Marie. Hey, that's, you know, Lena.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, and then also Hedwig and the Angry Inch isn't like.
Yes.
It's not a piece of work that explains to you like this is what a trans woman is. It's like. You know,
no, it's very esoteric gender, it's, like, God, it's metaphor.
It's so fucking good. I only watched it, like, last year, which is, I realize, like, objectively crazy, but such a fucking good. Oh, my God. I love it so much.
I have the original Broadway, like, recording on vinyl, and it's, like, my favorite possession.
I might go watch that after we're done here. I might...
It's one of my favorite, very favorite movies. It's just so beautiful, and it makes me cry every time. And when it's like she's whole again, you know?
Right.
Because she loves herself, damn it.
Yeah.
Tearing up thinking about it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so fucking good. Okay. Okay. So I guess it's more, right, because even when you're like, I don't know, like when you're right, I sort of started calling myself bisexual when I was like probably like 11 or 12. And like I knew, you know, LGBT, like I could tell you what all those letters stood for, but I don't think I could have like really explained to you like what transgender was in like a really like kind of, you know, in any like actual like, I don't think I guess I'm asking, is that kind of maybe like the, well, you say you sort of know what trans women are. So, okay, I guess that's, I don't know. It's weird the kind of way you have to piece together this information as like a child.
No, for real. Again, but also how I knew so many trans women. I was also on Tumblr for like, since like 2009.
So you find F yeah, FTM and are like, this is me.
I was like, this is real, this is me, and this is exactly who I'm supposed to be.
Go introduce yourself to your friends as Shelby. What about teachers and your parents and other?
I was pretty unafraid about it. Again, like, it's the same thing with coming out. Because what had happened with coming out as, like, a lesbian, because that's what I came out as first, because I didn't know I liked men until I was 23, but we can talk about that later. But anyway, so I was a lesbian, and then, shit, what were we talking about? I'm sorry. It's getting close to taking my second dose of my ADHD medication.
It's okay. I asked you what you thought, how you, if you sort of like.
Oh, yes. So when I was 11, the girl came up to me and asked me if I like girls, and it didn't occur to me to lie. So I said yes. And so I was like the first lesbian at my middle school. Because again, this is like 2006. But yeah. And so I was just like, hey, world, I'm a boy now, and you're going to call me this, and these are my pronouns, and I'm going to get very upset if you don't go along with it. And so with my teachers were actually pretty cool about it. There were some that they were uncomfortable, and so they just didn't refer to me at all. My German teacher referred to me in the neutral Z.
Interesting.
God bless her, though. She was a good woman. But yeah, and then my parents didn't really care. They were working. My parents worked a lot, so they weren't really like around for most of it. But when they were, they didn't really mind. They were just like, oh, you know, Kay's experimenting. That's just Kay. Kay is the, because I've always been like a little bit of a social justice warrior ever since I was a child. Like, very bleeding heart. And so they just assumed that this was another another one of my gigs.
And you went off your estrogen supplements a kind of immediate decision of this, or like a kind of slow decision?
I went back and forth about it, kind of like, because I felt like once I come out as a boy, there's no going back. Like, you know? And so I thought about it, and I figured, hey, you know, if I don't like it, I can just go back on my supplements. Because surgery wasn't even, like, a thing that I knew was possible. Yet, I was just, like, I was in the mindset of, like, binding, that kind of thing. Growing out my facial hair, all the other stuff, not actual, because I was, again, I had high testosterone. My boobies weren't big in the general. So I thought about it for maybe like 2 weeks, which was a long time for me, because, I don't know, I was a very impulsive kid. So, taking 2 weeks to decide on it was like a year for regular people, in my opinion. So I just stopped taking it, and I started hiding it at first, but then eventually I was like, well, Mom, I'm just not going to take this anymore. You can stop refilling the prescription.
And how did your mom feel about that?
She was a little hesitant But also, I think she was just kind of glad to be rid of the expense for a little bit. I'm not going to lie. We were very poor, so it was like, you know, why bother then?
Yeah, they're happy on me.
Oh, no.
Okay, and so you said surgery wasn't really like a thing that was on your radar as like a kind of possibility. What about hormones? Was that right?
Like, hormones was...
You have elevated testosterone. Did you, I don't know, consider trying to elevate it more, or?
I did, actually. So it was all kind of like a trial and error thing. So in my mind, I was be like, okay, so I'm going to go 6 months and just off my supplements, and then we'll see how we feel. And then after 6 months, I kind of liked the results. I was getting SIRD. It was nice. Like, there's an ambiguousness about my face when I have short hair that kind of allows me to, you know, kind of go either way. Now I have long hair, and that's different, but back then I thought about, you know, maybe going a full mustache, and because I had a nice little John Waters, you know, a little thin one that I kept groomed, but I wanted like, you know, a beard. You know, I had a little neck beard, but I wanted like a full mountain man. Because my grandpa is a biker and he has a big ZZ Top beard. And so that was like my ideal of masculinity.
Okay.
Yeah, I love him. He's great.
That's amazing. Okay. But this is all while you're also still in high school.
Yeah, so like, again, it's one of those things where it's like, when I get a job, maybe, you know, because again, right. My family was very not well off. And so that was not really, it's just like, that would be nice.
Well, and also, I can't imagine that many of your peers had particularly impressive facial hair.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Like, there are some guys with like full beards. Like my brother had a full beard, but again, I guess that might just be genetic. Because there was also a lot of like whisper mustaches. Like I definitely had a lot more leg hair and facial hair than a lot of the guys in my class.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to think back to high school and who had what, who was how scraggly versus who could actually put up something respectable. Or
yeah, like this one guy I went to school with, we called him Dr. Time. He had a full beard down his like his navel.
Wow.
By the time he was like freaking 18.
Okay, I can see why you call him Dr. Time.
He was an interesting fella. I hope he's doing well. Dr. Time, if you hear this, I hope you're doing okay. I'm not going to drop your real name, but you know who it is.
Dr. Time, you have an open invitation to come on When a Guy Has. I'm sure whatever your gender is, it's very interesting.
He's a very interesting guy.
Okay, hell yeah. Okay. What about, like, kids that weren't friends with you? Like,
so, unfortunately, I did get hate crimed a little bit a couple of times. I mean, and that's just, I just was like, I felt like a character in one of those trans novels that I read from the library. I was like, oh, this is just part of my origin story. And then one day I'm going to be a big, strong man, and I'll be able to defend myself, blah, 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 that kind of thing. Although I wasn't like a weak person. I was on the wrestling team. It was like a lot of guys at once that got it. But, you know, it wasn't too bad. I'm still here.
Yeah. I see.
Oh, there was one time someone threw a brick through my window. That was great.
Oh, whoa. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's because I had the trans flag. It was, like, a trans flag and, like, one of those, you know, like, one of those American flags that are also the gay pride flag? So I had those up in my window.
This when you were still living with your parents, or was this after?
Yes, I lived with my parents until I moved where I am now across the country at like 22.
Damn, that's fucked. What? I don't know. Was there ever like a question that's interesting? The wrestling team. I don't know. That's interesting. I guess this was like probably prior. I mean, this definitely was prior to like any kind of discussion about like trans kids and sports.
Yeah.
At least like in a broad sense. I'm sure. I don't know. Did that ever come up at while you were doing it, or like what was that? What was that like?
There was one time where I beat this one young woman, and you could tell like she had a wrestling dad, and her dad like really was into it, and like it was his whole life that hit. And truth be told, his daughter wasn't very good at wrestling in the first place. But I don't think his attitude was helping. But anyway, he challenged it, and he called me some colorful slurs, but not really trans slurs. It was more like being a lesbian. They read me as like a butch lesbian at that moment.
Okay. Interesting. That's interesting. Like, I mean,
he called me the D word and was like, "You're going to let that D word go with my, that's not even fair. Like, how are they even, she should be on the boys team, blah, blah, blah." And you know, I think he could have read me as trans and just didn't know the vernacular and just decided to go with that. I don't know. It was a very weird situation, just standing there like while this grown man is yelling at my coach about me, and I'm just like kicking the dust at my feet.
Huh. Fascinating. Okay.
Thankfully, my coach was a guy, so the main thing he cared about was that we won, and this guy was a sore loser, no matter what the argument was. So he defended me, and he was like, "Well, the best player won."
I mean, true. So
I imagine today there would be a much, much bigger to do. Yeah. But at the time, only once I played two seasons of wrestling, and that was the only incident. And I was pretty good, if I do say so myself.
Did those two seasons overlap with, I'm trying to keep my chronology straight, did those overlap with a time that you were, I'm laughing because I'm about to sound like a transphobe, trans-identified?
I mean, it is what it is. I did wrestling for the 2011 and the 2012 seasons, and I began social and physical transition in taking, you know, going off my hormone, my supplements in 2011. So the first 2 years of my transition, as it were, overlapped with my wrestling, and then I ended up having to go to a different school because the jumping.
Right.
And also, I almost got arrested for domestic terrorism, but that's like a whole other thing that we can talk about.
Oh, what? What happened?
So if you look up the Wolf Pack, I used to know this person named Wolfie Blackheart, and Wolfie Blackheart was into taxidermy, and we were all like in this because we were wolfaboos, and we were seeing kids, and we wore tails, and before it was cool, and you know, we were goth, and so we were stereotyped kind of like Columbine kids. And so Wolfie was given a dog body, as it were, to taxidermy for somebody. It was their pet that passed away, but like the story went out, and like there's these kids at another high school that were like, "Well, we're gonna shoot up the school," and they were like, "Well, these kids are interconnected because they're all gauze," and so they take me out of class, and there's so much police, and I'm in the principal's office, and they're like, is this you? And it's like pictures of me with my tail and my friends, like all freaking gothed out with Wolfie and stuff from like our Facebooks and doing little goth kid stuff.
And they were like, you're a leader of the wolf pack. You're planning to blow up the school. We're going to detain you. And I was like, I would like to call my mother. And then my mom sorted it out. But they were like definitely trying to get me on some stuff that I didn't do. I was just a little goth kid who was weird.
Oh my goodness. This is crazy. I found a bunch of Reddit posts about this. Interesting.
Okay. Yes.
So that happened. This is why you switched schools?
So it was that. It was the combination of things. It was okay. That. And then also, I was pretty depressed from how I was being treated by my peers. Because my friends were okay with it. The rest of the general school population was not.
Okay. So with switching schools, did that seem like a way to, like, potentially, like, go stealth? Or...
A little bit, yeah. Because it was this very small arts high school that does not exist anymore. And my class was like maybe 30 kids all together.
Okay.
So, yeah. So.
Wait, was that the school you switched into or the school you were switching from?
Switching into.
Okay.
It was kind of like one of those schools where it's like, for a lot of people, it's their last chance high school.
Okay.
Before like alternative high school. And although to be honest, I got a very good arts education from that place, surprisingly. But those people were more accepting, maybe because they were like also emo androgynous types. Mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Artsy types. That don't really like didn't really care. In fact, actually, this is actually pretty heartwarming. You'll love this. When I graduated in 2014, some freshmen came up to me, and I'll never forget this. They came up to me and they were like, "We just wanted to thank you because you showed us that this was possible and that we could be who we wanted to be." And they were just like three little trans boys, and it like freaking like made my heart melt. I cried, and they cried. It was beautiful. Yeah, so, and that's why I say I don't regret it ever
right.
that happened, even though, like, I'm not a boy now.
Yeah. Yeah, so how does that happen? Or when does that happen? Are we coming up on that, or is that still fun?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, the year after I graduated high school, I probably, I never... went back on my supplements specifically, but I did start taking regular birth control, and I'm still on it to this day. I had a period of not taking it when my family was homeless, but for like 2 or 3 years. We weren't homeless for 2 or 3 years, but I didn't have access to hormones for 2 or 3 years. But beyond that, I've always been on birth control since I was like 20 years old. But I was fully a boy until I was like 19.
Okay.
So I even started like work as a boy. Like I did library clerk work, and I also did Like, funnily enough, I did scorekeeping for the Catholic youth organization.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. As a boy.
Okay. And you transitioned back to being a woman while doing that, or?
So, I'm like 19 years old. There is a incident that happens where I am. I go to an anime convention in 2014, and I am, when I'm like 17 at this time, it was 2013. And so I was like preyed upon by this weird guy specifically for being a young trans person, and I was assaulted for that. And so it kind of like, I don't know, I went through like a weird period because. I'm also like a CSA survivor, so I went through like a weird disassociation with like my identity and body, and for like a long time. And the only thing that I felt like kind of moored to at, you know, during that period was lesbianism. And so I just kind of like, I didn't have the energy to really do it all anymore. I was just like, I don't know. I had a lot of complicated feelings around that time.
Okay.
But yeah, Harley, if you're out there, I hope you're dead.
Yeah, what up?
But anyway, so I started identifying as a woman again and identifying as like a butch lesbian.
Okay. And
again, occupying that transmasculine space, as the kids would call it these days.
Right. Okay. Did you feel any sort of like animosity towards the idea that you'd identified as trans previously, or was this just kind of, I don't know.
I never did.
Okay.
I never really had that moment of like, God, you're so stupid. Why would you do that? It's just like, I don't know. I feel like it gave me such a better understanding at, you know, coming out the other side of it through all of that, a better understanding of who I am and how I interact with the world and how the world interacts with me. And it did give me a lot of really cool trans friends that I love dearly, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. I feel like, I don't know, I could definitely imagine someone in that position coming around to some sort of, like, blaming, you know, the gender cult or whatever for the fact that you were assaulted or something like that. Obviously not, like, only outcome, but definitely... Sorry, what were you gonna say?
Well, the thing about that is really... that actually really speaks to, you know, how trans people are actually more likely to be assaulted than to be the assaulter, just because I was specifically preyed on because, you know, he had a thing for underage trans boys specifically. And so, you know, I don't think I ever was like, hey, you know, resentful of it at all anyway. It just, you know, I had other things to worry about.
Yeah.
Than to be mad about it.
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. No, it's just sort of, I don't know. I guess it's, it feels like it's a very easy, like, origin story for transphobia or something. But I think it's important to, like, highlight when those kinds of obvious origin stories, or maybe what seem like obvious origin stories, don't actually play out that way, because it's never like, I don't know, transphobia is like never, you know, inevitable, right? Yeah.
I think that perhaps and all the publications and all the detransitioners can like quote me on this, but I think perhaps they have a bit of sour grapes that because I will say a lot of it is genetics, you know? And so if you're bald, that's probably because your dad is bald. And you should not be mad at me because I am not bald and I do not care that I was trans and now I'm not. And you probably shouldn't care that you're trans and now you're not either. I don't know. Buy a wig.
So strange. I went and checked up on, like, one of the D-trans subreddits, and I feel like something like half of the people there had never been on hormones or anything, and I was just like, so
that's interesting.
I was like, so what are you so hung up on about this? And I mean, like, I think the cynical way to read that is like a lot of these people, because it was one of the more transphobic ones, right? I wasn't like,
right,
you know, but it was like, I mean, I guess the sort of cynical way to read this is that all these kids are still dysphoric and they've just sort of fallen into this, like...
I see a lot of those more often than, like, not. And it makes me sad. And a lot of it, I feel like, is a lot of, like, religious abuse.
I mean, fuck. It was just going around on Twitter the other day that... is it Chloe Cole who like filed the lawsuit against Kaiser?
Yeah.
Yeah, where she's
I saw that, and
Which is,
yeah, I still have dysphoria and I still like hate myself every day. And it's like, dude, you don't have to live like that. What the hell?
Well, it's also, I'm so in shock. The deposition being like, I want to sue this place, or I want to sue my insurance company or the health network or whatever the fuck for not properly gatekeeping me because I detransitioned after I did LSD. That's a crazy thing to admit to in a deposition.
Yeah, and you thought like, that God was talking to you and that you made a mistake.
Admit that your detransition was prompted by an illegal hallucinogenic trip is... I cannot understand, like... Like, she's not planning on winning this lawsuit, is she? Like...
I honestly don't even think it's about winning or losing. I think it's about just having the narrative out there and hoping that people don't look too deeply. Because, like, the normal American will look and see that she detransitioned from a drug trip and be like, oh, that's kind of off, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But no. But the point is to have the headline to latch onto.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, it's a circus court. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder what the judge was thinking in that moment.
Right? No, I mean, I'm sorry. This is completely off topic. It's just, I've been thinking about it for days because I'm like, what the fuck?
Like, what? Well, this would be the episode to talk about it on.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. So, okay. No, I mean, the detransition, in that sort of context makes a lot of sense, I guess. I know you mentioned, I can't remember if it was at the beginning or if it was in the sort of like preamble, a boyfriend. Are you?
Yes.
Yeah. What's up with?
So actually, I love him. So it's so funny. And well, it's not funny at first, but then it gets funny later. So we're back to the lesbian space, right? And I'm a butch lesbian. In this time, I'm getting really in touch with my Native American roots because my tribe is a previously thought to be extinct tribe, and we've gotten together, and through our oral traditions and history, we were able to piece our clans back together, and we two have two thriving clans now, and great. But so I was getting really into being a Native American at the time, and I had long hair and I kept it in braids. And that was my, but I was still like pretty butch presenting and in every other way. But I had a girlfriend, and she was not very kind to me, and she kind of forced me to move across the country, and then broke up with me like a week after I moved out here. And I was single for a little bit after that, and I was again, I was just like kind of traumatized by women a little bit because it was a really severely abusive relationship, and I was really afraid of getting hurt like that again because I felt like maybe dudes couldn't hurt me the way that women could because I actually cared about women. As fucked up as that sounds, but that was like my headspace at the time because I was lonely. You know, like I was a human being.
Yeah, a bad breakup, especially like a bad breakup after you've completely changed your like your social context by, like you said, moving across the country for this person.
Right, and no, away from my family, away from everything.
It's extremely disorienting.
So I started. I was on Tinder, and for a while, I was just hooking up with girls, as one does, you know, after the breakup. Because I'm in this new place, and I am like, well, I guess I'm here because I can't really afford to move back right now. And so I started. One day, I just started putting men in my feed for Tinder. And this is when Tinder was good and you could actually like find people. Because I hear it's bad now. I wouldn't know. I'm in a loving relationship. But I put men, and then I didn't like it. Guys are gross for the most part. And I was just like literally the day that I was about to take men out of my feed and be like, this was a bad idea. my boyfriend messaged me and he was like, you know, why do you have a soy sauce bottle in your room? And that was it. I was like, because you know what? That means he's observant.
Aww.
There was a soy sauce bottle in my room. And we just talked for like a month, really. We texted for like a month after that before we even met up. And honestly, he comes from a background where he was raised by three women. Not in a cool polyamorous way, no. But he was raised by like his aunt, his mom, and his grandma all in like one household, you know?
Right.
Unfortunately, I thought he was an egg when I first was getting to know him. I know he is not, and he's a very manly man, but you know, he's a very sensitive person, and it's just like not overtly misogynistic in the way that I was used to men speaking to me. Okay. And also, he was very funny, and that's like the number one thing for me. But yeah, that was like 5 years ago, and we've been together ever since.
Okay, aww. Sweet.
But that was actually, you know what's so funny is I had more of a crisis of identity going from lesbian to bisexual than I did going from trans to cis.
Yeah.
Because everything, my whole social identity, like my whole historical reference of my sexuality was wrapped up in lesbian. My feminism was wrapped up in lesbian. All my friends were lesbians. My girlfriend was super biphobic, and so I was afraid that everybody would hate me because I was suddenly a bisexual after I had been a lesbian for so long. So that was very nerve-wracking. And also, funnily enough, I call my parents, and you know, I'm talking about my life, and I'm talking to my sister about my life, and I say I have a boyfriend. They're like, boy? So that was everybody's reaction. And even to this day, I still get read as a lesbian, like just in my everyday life.
Yeah. You've got swagger.
Yeah. I always say I have a very commanding presence about me.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, I would assume that from the conversation. Can you tell me a little bit more about your, I don't know if you would mind talking a little bit more about your native clan and that sort of, that sounds like a really interesting thing. I want to know more about it.
No, I would love to actually, because not a lot of people even know that my clan exists. Yes. So I'm.
What's the deal?
So my father and my father's father and his father, all the way back until before any intervention of the Spaniards, we have lived in the Gulf Coast of Mexico, what is now known today as. And some of us, like the entire tribe, some of us migrated up to where would be today. And so we were assimilated in the 1800s during the Texas becoming its own sovereign state, I guess you could say. And so a lot of us were forced assimilated. A lot of us were murdered. And a lot of our, like just in general, our fishing grounds were taken from us. Our, you know, the places where we would live were taken from us. We were forced into like poverty, essentially. And, you know, after a while, the identity just transforms into General Tejano. And then sometime within the last, I want to say like 7 years, there's been a movement, and because a bunch of us down there, you know, it starts with some people taking a DNA test and it's 100% Native, where you think it's like going to be like some sort of Hispanic origin. And so so we all take some, and so we're all Native. And so we're like, well, what kind of Native? And so we go to the, you know, like our, so my grandma lived to be 96. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to get some of my family history out of her. And basically, when my grandma was a very, 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 very young girl, like maybe 3 or 4, her father was forced to, was basically shunned away and like forced away from my grandma's mom. And my grandma's mom, who is a 100% Native woman, gets forced married to like some white guy. But my grandma's already like a child, but they're like, this is your dad now, and now you have to speak Spanish, and now you have to now this is your name now. And so now we're able to go back and thankfully talk to some of our elders, and they were able to tell us about the forced assimilation. But today we have 2 clans. I belong to the Hawk clan. My family does anyway. I don't really, unfortunately, politically, it's not viable for me to live here, which is a shame. I would love to live on my native lands, but
Yeah, no, that I understand.
But yeah, that's my tribe, Karakawa.
That's really cool. Yeah, no, and then you, I don't know, what about, you said at the beginning that you identify as Two-Spirit, and I know a little bit about, like, the history of that term specifically, and the way that it was sort of chosen as a, like, umbrella term across, right, like, many different cultures that had different sorts of traditions. I don't know if you know, the story you were telling is all about the sort of forced assimilation and fracturing. I don't know if you know anything about your tribe's history, if they had any kind of rule, like,
right,
that would be sort of I don't know if you know that sort of thing or not, if that's kind of something that's been lost to colonialism.
So not in the way that a lot of recognized tribes would have, but I do know that there were women that fulfilled more of a masculine hunter role. Mm-hmm. And that was considered in the same category as what would be considered by colonialist scientists as third gender men, but what is probably more closer to trans women in, right. And of course it takes on like a shamanistic, role.
Okay. Yeah. As
kind of like, oh God, I may be butchering the pronunciation, but the Hiraj in India.
Yeah. I think it's Hijra, but yeah.
Hijra. Thank you. See,
I mean, I might also be wrong. I think that's right though. But okay.
Yours sounds better than mine, so maybe more confident.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Cool. Okay. And when did you sort of, was that kind of something you came to as you were detransitioning, quote unquote? I guess it's sort of, right, is a little strange to talk about.
So I actually got really into feminist theory. And okay. I thought a lot about, like, colonial gender and, like, what is a woman? Well, woman's a class. And I belong to that class. So where do I go from here with these feelings? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so as I got older and more like comfortable in who I am and, you know, how I present myself to the world, I began to think about my role. Because again, being Native, very community-based, and like I specifically, like just me personally in my personal life, I very much strongly believe in like being there for community, giving back to your community, and actually living in your community. So I do take on like a motherly role with a lot of people in my, you know, vicinity, but I also take on the fatherly role as like protector in a physical protection sense. But like, it's hard to conceptualize into words.
Yeah, no, I understand that. It's all these concepts sort of fall short of what the actual, what you know, sort of is actually going on. But I can sort of understand or imagine.
But yeah, that's why I would say spiritually to spirit, but also like again. Woman is a class, and I am a woman.
Okay. Cool. What other questions do I have for you? What else have we... Where else do we need to go? Was there anything you expect... Is there anything we haven't talked about yet that you feel like is pertinent?
We could talk about my mom's gender.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You said gay man in a woman's body.
So, funnily enough, and she really is, she's always said, she said, I'm Victor Victoria, always, ever since I was a kid, I'm Victor Victoria. And she's also the same in that she presents very masculinely in like her mannerisms and, you know, very aggressive women. And I know it's like, it sounds sexist because it's like, oh, well, why can't women be aggressive? But like, you know what I mean? Like there are cultural signifiers and how people will read you and react in that fashion. And so my mom comes off as a very masculine woman. She, you know, when she worked, because my mom's very chronically ill, so she can't work now. But when she worked in a very male-dominated field in construction, like project management. And she's always felt more comfortable in a masculine role than being in a feminine role. Like, she could never be, like, just a wife to my... dad ever, which is not a criticism at all, but like she always was like in competition with my dad in success. And you know, at the same time, she had like very hallmark taste of like an old queenie gay guy, like a lot of show tunes, a lot of old black and white movies, a lot of like, you know, a lot of Madonna. Oh my god, my mom loves Madonna so much, she wants to be here so bad. But yeah, and Victor Victoria, and she's like, I'm a woman, but like inside, I'm a gay man. And actually, me transitioning kind of made her like feel okay about these feelings, because she used to have a lot of shame. Also, my mom is bisexual too. All the women in my family are bisexual. So my mom used to have a lot of shame about her attraction to women. In fact, so when my mom was pregnant with me, she fooled around with a woman and she thought that's why I was gay. And so she had a complex about it for the longest time. But anyways, my mom nowadays will just straight up be like, I'm not a woman. I'm a gay man in a woman's body. But she doesn't want to transition. She's just like, in my mind, that's who I am.
Yeah, no, there's a difference between that and like trans guys, like
yeah, no, I know,
like gay trans guys, like that's like a right there. There's like a it's in the, I don't know, it's in the mouth feel. That was a bad word to use there. It's in the texture, you know, it's in the timbre. Right, the sort of distinction between woman that is a gay guy and trans gay guy.
Gay guy that is a gay guy.
Yeah, gay guy. Yeah, they're different things, right? They're very different things, but that's lovely. I love that.
Yeah. But if my mom had a choice to come back, she would definitely... She says this all the time. She's like, I would be a drag queen, Kayla.
Yeah.
That's who I would be.
Yeah.
So that's that. If my mom dies and she comes back as a drag queen, that's her ideal.
Yeah, that's like that's a step up in the ladder. in the chain of being. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, this was lovely. This was a great conversation. Yeah, and thank you to the audience for listening. If you enjoyed this, you can support us on Patreon. We're going to have some more episodes soon. You can also, I've already talked about it a bunch, but the reading group is happening. I know Kay is going to be participating.
I will be there, and I will have thoughts and also ideas.
Yes, I'm so excited. Very, very excited for the reading group. I need to start reading. I got my copy the other day. I know you and I talked about the covers. The fact that your cover is amazing. I got the
Oh, you got the standard like penguin classic one with like the razor.
Yeah, which is a very strange choice.
That's what I thought.
I have a bunch of sorry, this is gonna turn into Foucault book cover design, but I have opinions. I have a couple of those books, and none of them really, like, the things on them, like, don't really have much, like, sense to them.
But yeah, what's up with the history of sexuality one?
Yeah, like, I actually, my History of Sexuality volume one is a different one, but volumes two and three, I have, like, the apple that's like started to go brown and the screw.
The screw is the one I was referencing, but yes.
Yeah. I'm just like, I don't know what is going on with those, but the razor feels a little like a little gendery. Like that feels a little like there's a thematic thing going on. I don't know if that's.
Well, I'll tell you what, as somebody who's read about a quarter way through, I'll tell you what, there's a theme of lesbianism, and I can't tell you how glad I am about it.
Yes, I'm, yeah, I honestly, like...
Although it's really, sad, it's sad lesbians.
Oh, that tracks. I honestly, like...
Yeah.
Forgot any details, because I haven't read the Herculean Barbarin, or Barbin stuff before, confidentially. One of the things in the Foucault, I don't know, I guess because he did the whole sort of, you know, he wrote the introduction and he was the one that like published it, but it's not by him, it's by, we're trying to read the thing by Barbin, right?
So it is by Barbin, and he actually found it while going through archives, and that's how it got published, and he wrote the introduction, that's cool though, because otherwise it would have been lost to time, and now we get to know her thoughts.
Yeah, no, there was a story I was told while I was in undergrad about Foucault. Someone asking Foucault like, "What should I be reading? You know, how should I be doing my research?" And Foucault was like, basically just said, "You just go to the National Library and pick stuff off the wall," which I assume is how he found this, just randomly going through the National Library and picking stuff off the wall, which is really cool. I'm really excited. I guess the fact that this is always sort of like put in this context of Foucault is going to be something that I want to kind of stay in kind of like, what's the word? Tension with, because obviously, like I've talked about on the podcast a lot, I really love Foucault and like have spent a great deal of time with him. Intellectually and sort of, you know, have obviously a great deal of fondness to him, but also like, you know, this is the way that this book has been handed to us, and I don't want to take that just kind of like on face value. And I also want to sort of, I don't know, appreciate the memoir on its own.
Mm-hmm. I will say I've read the introduction and he has some cool ideas in it, but also I don't know. I feel like her words are so tender, and I don't know. I want to be her friend.
That's lovely. I'm really excited to read it.
And maybe take her away from all of this 19th century BS.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to it. That's really exciting. There is I need to find the pages. There's a section in Gender Trouble where I remember Butler's reading Foucault against himself. With respect to some of the stuff he says in the introduction, So I'm sure we'll talk about that. Not to get ahead of. I'm sorry for getting ahead. It's just
spoilers for the book club. Join the book club.
Yes, if any of this sounds interesting, please.
Join the reading group.
Yeah, book club, reading group, whatever the fuck. I don't care. I'll call it a book club. I don't want to be. God, I guess I don't know. Is reading group
pretentious?
I'm sorry.
Book club poo poo. I'm in a reading group.
I don't know,
but it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. Thank you for listening, if you're still listening and you didn't just turn and say goodbye like 2 minutes ago. And thank you again to Kay.
Of course. I love everybody and also you.
Oh, thank you.